Welcome back to the Classically Current podcast with Zach and Kyle. If you have not joined us before, this is the podcast that is dedicated to linking current films of today with the classic films of the past. And we recently reviewed the movie Onward and decided to pair that current film with Brother Bear, which came out in October 20th, 2003. And it is the 44th Disney animated feature film. And we're going to get into the director profile, talk about the creation of the film, how it was developed, the reception of the movie, how well it did in the box office, and how well it was received critically. And we'll kind of talk about which film is more watchable, Onward or Brother Bear, and which one did we enjoy more. We'll also talk about some similarities between the two and give it our overall rating and where to stream it, so you can get that information as well. So with that, we'll just kind of talk about what the film is about. Brother Bear is about this Inuit boy named Kenai who pursues a bear in revenge for a fight that he provoked in which his brother Sitka is killed. He tracks down the bear and kills it, but the spirits, incensed by this unnecessary death, changed Kenai into a bear himself as punishment. In order to be human again, Kenai must travel to a mountain where the northern lights touch the earth. On his way, Kenai is joined by a bear cub and learns to see through another's eyes, feel through another's heart, and discover the true meaning of brotherhood.
How's it going, bear?
I'm not a bear.
Well, gee, you're one big beaver.
No kidding.
I'm a man.
I was transformed into a bear, magically.
But crazy.
Because then I...
Do either of you know where the lights touch the earth?
No. No.
Hey, I know that place.
You do?
Yeah, follow me.
My name's Coda. Stay with me. Coda.
Tell everybody I'm on my way. And I'm loving every step I take.
I don't want to brag or nothing, but I'm a raging ball of brown fur.
Oh, really?
This November.
And keep all that cuddly bear stuff to a minimum, okay, kid?
The truth is, I got separated from my mom.
See through another's eyes.
Those monsters are really scary, especially with those sticks.
Feel through another's heart.
Coda, don't be afraid.
And discover the meaning of brotherhood.
I always wanted a brother.
The film was one of the last films to be produced at one of Disney's animated production places in Orlando, Florida. The previous two films were Mulan and Lilo and Stitch, but this was the third and final one that was produced in the Disney MGM studios in Orlando, Florida. It was shut down in March of 2004, not long after the release of this movie, and in favor of more computer animated features. So it was at the very end of the 2D animation style, and they were going in favor of the 3D animated style that Pixar made so famous back in the late 90s and the early 2000s. So this is really just one of the last hurrahs that Disney had, although they did do A Princess and the Frog later on, but that movie was made by a different animation studio. But
I was going to ask, when did Disney and Pixar, like, when did they separate?
Well, Pixar was its own animation studio that started with Toy Story in 1995. And then it was producing movies with Disney. So Pixar was its own studio,
Okay. But
it was releasing its films through Disney up until 2006, when it was officially bought by Disney for like $3 billion. Cool. And then its first joint venture, I believe, was Cars, technically, when it released, because that was around when Cars came out. But as you can see, in the late 90s, people were kind of getting sick of the regular animation style that Disney was used to having. And there wasn't a lot of animation studios even around besides Disney in the late 90s. And you get a rise of animation studios in the early 2000s with DreamWorks. And then later on, you get Illumination and you get the Ice Age franchise, which was through Fox. And so this kind of marked an era that had come to an end with the run-of-the-mill.
This seems like it kind of came out animation on the cusp of that, like where more production companies were gearing more towards a computer-generated graphic or animation instead of, you know, like that typical 90s animation, 80s, 90s that we kind of grew up on with Disney. But I do think there's a certain charm to it that maybe you don't get with some of the movies nowadays that are animated. But even for 2003, I do think it seems a little dated for its time. But yeah.
Yeah, and by no means is the 2D animation style a foregone art, because you still do have a lot of anime that is produced in Japan. I know Hayao Miyazaki and his crew, they've been making those types of movies for years, and they continue to make those types of movies. And they actually are going to be doing, I think it was Hayao Miyazaki's son that is going to be directing the very first 3D or CG animated feature at that studio in Studio Ghibli. Cool. So that's interesting to see when that comes out. But this is, like you said, it was just right at the end of that era. And, you know, American audiences were kind of getting sick of this style, is what Disney was thinking. And so they haven't really done another one except for Princess and the Frog, which came out a little bit afterwards. But everything had changed once Pixar came in. You know, they were starting to... audiences were starting to get used to a new style of animation, and that's continued on till today. The directors for this film, there wasn't a lot of work that we found that they had done in the past as far as directorial work. Kyle, what did you find out on these two directors?
Yeah, so there's Robert Walker and there's Aaron Blaise. They were two directors. Robert Walker actually passed away back in 2015 from a heart attack. But he had worked with Walt Disney Animation Studios in 1989. That's when he joined them. And his first project was the Roger Rabbit short film, Roller Coaster Rabbit. He's done some other work with them, like Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, The Lion King, Mulan, and Lilo and Stitch, to name a few. But yeah, there's not really, I think that this was one of the only ones they really directed together. And I don't think either of them have a lot of directing experience beyond this one, do they?
No, it seems like when I was looking up films that they actually directed, they're more animated. They're more, I should say, supervising animators. Or
it seems like kind of that's like where they all kind of begin in animation, and then they kind of work their ways up to like the, you know, production team, and then maybe supervising the animation. And then but there was also Aaron Blaise, and he was also animator, director, illustrator, and fine artist, and he graduated with a degree in illustration in 1989 from Ringling College of Art. And then, 1989, he went on to work with the Disney feature animation company for 21 years. Did a lot of the same projects as Robert Walker. So I think they probably had a lot of experience working together. And maybe they knew each other pretty well, that they could co-direct this and get along and make something cohesive. But this film did earn them both an animated nomination or Academy Award nomination for the Best Animated Feature Film, which they rightfully lost to Finding Nemo. But
well, you can't compete against Finding Nemo. I mean, this was when the award for animated feature film was just kind of getting its footing. So you have, I believe the first one was 2001 when Shrek won, and then they didn't have an animated Oscar before that time. So you see in that year, 2004, which this movie came out in 2003, but the Oscars were in 2004, and there was only three films nominated, Finding Nemo, Brother Bear, and Triplets of Belleville. Mm-hmm. That should just show you how many animated films were released back then. Not as many as you see today.
Yeah, it is kind of surprising, because this movie, we'll kind of get into more of like its reception, but I mean, it had a 37% on Rotten Tomatoes, and this is still getting an Academy Award nomination for Best Animated Feature Film that year. I think it's just they're kind of few and far in between, so they just kind of picked, you know, whatever they could get for that award season.
Yeah, and it's interesting how this movie came about, because the CEO, Michael Eisner, who I can't remember when he left, and the new current CEO, who is there now, is taking the reins. But this CEO, Michael Eisner, was a fan of The Lion King because it had a lot of critical and commercial success. And he urged Disney for more animal-centric animated features. And so he suggested having a North American backdrop, which that is what this movie has in the backdrop, is a lot of North American culture and Inuit or native folk. So Michael Eisner took some inspiration from an original landscape painting by Albert Bierstadt that he had bought. So that piece of imagery, that art that he hung up in his house, he got an idea for another animal-centric film.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how he got the idea for his animation studio to make Brother Bear, which is kind of interesting. And the king idea would be a bear instead of a king.
Like a lion?
So, yeah. Like, they got in. It was kind of inspired by the Shakespearean play King Lear, which centered around an old blind bear who traveled the forest with his three daughters. That was the idea of this film. But it kind of morphed over time, as most animation stories do. They morph into something completely different. I remember learning about the production of Inside Out, a Pixar film that came out in 2015. Mm-hmm. It was completely different from the beginning to where that film ended up, and that's what happens a lot in animation. And so they ended up going with a two bear story where you had the man turn into a bear and then have them in a North American backdrop there.
It's kind of interesting how they use like storytelling devices, right?
Yes.
Like one of the things that this film actually uses is different aspect ratio throughout the film. You can see how it kind of begins at its standard widescreen aspect ratio of 1.75. I don't even know. How do you say that, Zach? 1.751?
I think that's how you say it. I'm not really sure.
But anyways,
I just know what it means.
Yeah, it's just like you see the numbers, you kind of, okay, you know what to compare it to. So that's kind of like, wow, Kenai is a human. And in addition, they ended up having the film's art direction and color scheme be grounded in its realism. But then whenever Kenai transforms into a bear, which is, what, 24, 25 minutes into the picture, the film itself transitions and transforms as well to an anamorphic aspect ratio of 2.35:1. And it's kind of more.
And what does that really mean? Yeah, because general audiences may not know what that actually means. It just means that there's a black bar at the top and the bottom of the screen. So if you're watching this on Disney Plus, or if you have the Blu-ray, you'll have a full screen on the TV up until he transforms into a bear, and then it'll kind of go into a wide screen is what that
is. Is that their way of trying to, in essence, open the audience's eyes to the bigger picture?
That might be.
You never know.
To me, it's a rare occurrence for an animated movie to do this, to change aspect ratios like that. They must have had a very specific purpose for why. Your guess is as good as mine as to why. Was it really that effective in conveying the emotional aspects of the movie?
I don't know. Because it did feel like the overall message wasn't necessarily a bad message. Like, there were some good messages in there, but I have trouble like with just like maybe a couple of them. I don't know. It's like they almost humanize bears. Like it's like I think it's got some anti-hunting sort of vibe in there. Like, you know, how it's like we should appreciate all life and love all life, which I get that. However, I think...
Well, the whole... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just thought it was ironic that this movie also comes out around the time of Timothy Treadwell, a.k.a. Grizzly Man, his death to a bear that mauled and ate him.
Like, oh, don't you find that ironic? I completely forgot about that.
Like this, I think that literally happened, like, if I'm not mistaken. I'll have to go back and confirm the timeline, but I believe he died like early October of 2003. Like, that's when his remains were found with his girlfriend. And like, I just find it funny, like, this movie comes out about, you know, like, loving all life, like respecting all, you know, bear life, that their lives matter too. It's just like, wow,
that's interesting. Well, I didn't realize that it came out around that time. I remember watching that movie Grizzly Man, which I believe was a Werner Herzog documentary.
We watched it together.
We watched that together in high school. We were just hanging out and wanted to watch
it. Well, that was a fascinating documentary, wasn't it?
It was, but I didn't realize it came out around this time. That's fascinating.
You know what? We should have paired those two together. This with with Grizzly Man.
You could have gotten a lot of similarities between that movie and this movie.
Something.
The interesting thing about this movie is the cast. Because when looking back on it, because I watched this when I was fairly young, maybe 13, 14, teenager, because I just got it from the library and wanted to check it out because it was one I hadn't seen before. And now that I'm older, I didn't even realize that Joaquin Phoenix is the main lead character. And then you have Jeremy Suarez, which is the Coda bear. And that is an actor who I believe was in the Bernie Mac show.
Jeremy Swartz?
If I remember right. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I remember seeing him act in that. The way he got the role is he had auditioned for Finding Nemo, and they liked him, but he wasn't right for that part. So they remembered him, though, for this film and got him to do the role here. And then you also have Michael Clark Duncan, the late great, who I always enjoy watching him on screen. But he was actually originally going to be the main mentor for Joaquin Phoenix character Kenai, but they actually changed it to have a brother relationship, like a younger brother relationship with Kenai and Coda.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Which is interesting. And you also have the music, which if I was to describe this movie for Disney fans who have seen a lot of other Disney movies and hadn't seen this one, it is kind of a mixture of The Lion King and Tarzan in the way it's kind of, because you have the nature element, you also have a soundtrack that is similar to Tarzan because Phil Collins' work. Phil Collins did the soundtrack for Tarzan, and then he wrote the songs for this film, but he did not perform all of them, which is interesting. But Kyle, what other information did you find out on Phil Collins' involvement?
Well, we found out that they decided they were going to let him co-write the score as well as creating and composing some of the songs. He did end up composing 6 songs for the film and did share some vocal performance duties along with Tina Turner. And she had actually announced her retirement from touring and hadn't released an album since her 24/7 back in 99. But they kind of had a duo a little bit, like they kind of shared a little bit of the duties. But yeah, like you said, it was similar to Tarzan. That was the other one that Phil Collins had scored. I feel like it worked more for Tarzan. And in this, I don't know, it almost seemed a little bit cheesy to me. I don't know if it worked quite as well for this film. I don't know. It's just maybe the feeling of it didn't seem almost too much or just over the top for it. But
I think what, for me, for this music, it's just kind of the Tarzan soundtrack. It was all Phil Collins. It all had a similar vibe to them. Mm-hmm. Phil Collins, although he did help compose these six songs, they did not seem like they meshed all that well together as a unit. They kind of didn't have similar vibes. And so mm-hmm. you have different feelings throughout the movie. You have that opening number, which I really enjoy the opening number. And I suppose I didn't realize it at the time, but I guess that is Tina Turner's voice in that
there was
opening number. But there's other ones that were in the movie that just didn't connect as well with the narrative as much as the Tarzan songs connected to Tarzan.
It kind of interrupted the narrative, at least like on one scene. I think it's where Kenai is kind of explaining to Coda how he, his mom's not going to be coming back and stuff. And I actually found that to be a little bit confusing. I was like, I mean, we figure he's probably going to tell him everything, but the music is kind of playing in and you don't really hear, Kenai say much to Coda. You just hear like, your mom's not coming back. And I think that's like, they wanted to kind of soften the blow a little bit, like with that, you know, that bad news part. But I kind of found it to interrupt it a little bit, to where it almost made it like confusing, like what all information does Coda find out? And
yeah, because in Tarzan, if you remember in Tarzan at the beginning, there's an opening number is trying to do something similar where you have the characters go through a traumatic event mm-hmm. and Phil Collins' music is playing and it kind of blends in nicely to where the music actually adds a lot to the emotion of the scene. And that one in Brother Bear, it kind of came along suddenly. I guess it did its purpose ultimately for me, but it does not compare to the way they helped tell the story in Tarzan.
Well, plus it just...
And so that kind of hurts it.
I think it just looks like it's copying Tarzan a little bit, you know. And this, it's like, that was done like 4 years prior when Tarzan came out. And it just kind of felt like it was maybe kind of like borrowing from other... you know, sources instead of, you know, trying to make its own sort of reputation.
Yeah, it just, this movie often gets forgotten as a Disney movie, and I think rightly so.
That's why.
Because it just doesn't really compare with its better animation that was happening around that time. And it kind of was the beginning of a little bit of a rut for Disney mm-hmm. as far as their animated movies. After this one, they had Home on the Range, they had Brother Bear, they had Mars Needs Moms, which came out later on.
About that one.
They had a slew of animated films that did not connect and did very poorly. And that was at the same time when DreamWorks was on the rise mm-hmm. with their Shrek franchise and with their other franchises that they were starting. And so it took a little bit for Disney to finally gain some more footing and gain some more popularity with their late 2000, I think it was early 2010 when they had the likes of Tangled. They had Wreck-It Ralph, they had Frozen, and so now they're coming out with the Big Hero 6 could fit into that category as well, mm-hmm. but they had a lot of bombs.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie by no means is terrible, and it did receive a decent amount of money in the box office.
Mm-hmm. It did make $250 million, correct, on a $46 million budget.
It was $46 million budget worldwide, $250 million if you go by the 1.5-time rule where you should make at least 1.5 times your production budget. I would say this profited it. This helped Disney profit with this movie. But it just kind of gets forgotten as one of the movies that Disney has produced, and I think that it is decent. It's good enough. It is a sweet movie. Mm-hmm. It is very short at an hour and 25 minutes, and that's including the credits, so it's really
it did feel
an hour and 15 or an hour and 18 minutes. It felt very rushed. It It felt very short. And we'll kind of get into our likes and dislikes of the movie now and kind of review it as a whole.
Yeah.
What did you think, Kyle?
Well, actually, one of my pros I was going to say about this movie was the two Moose Brothers characters. I liked both of them. I thought they were actually pretty funny. And Rut, I believe, was voiced by none other than the Rick Moranis, who had kind of disappeared off the face of the earth after like the mid-90s. And I think that was kind of due to his wife dying from, was it, some sort of cancer. I can't recall what it was. But he kind of had to be a single parent at that point. So he was trying to get away from Hollywood at that point. But he does make an appearance in this movie as a voice. And I thought it was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, Rick Moranis, the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids himself.
Yep.
He's made an appearance. He's in a lot of different movies in the 90s, late 80s. Spaceballs, Parenthood.
Yep.
And he worked with a comedian for this role. They did a show in Canada. I don't remember when it was. Maybe it was the late 80s or early 90s. They did a comedian show in Canada where they talked back and forth. I think it was a radio show that they did. And now they're here doing bits of comedy in the narrative. And I enjoyed the Moose. They're lighthearted.
Mm-hmm.
They're comic relief. They don't really have any bearing on the plot necessarily.
No.
But
they're kind of just there. They're kind of observers almost a little bit, like kind of as like the audience or whatever. They're like explaining to the audience a little bit maybe.
Right. And some pluses for me would be the opening number. I do like the opening number with the music. There's a lot of magic that is involved in this movie. And that's a similarity, I would say, to Onward, in that the very opening scene of Onward, it talks about magic that used to be more prevalent in that story. And then in this movie, you have an opening where the Native American tribe leader is talking about, mm-hmm. he's telling a story to these young kids about how the world used to have magic or more magic in the past.
See, I thought
that was an interesting similarity.
Yeah, that was
between the two movies. We are going to talk a little bit more about the events that happen in Brother Bear. So if you have not seen the movie, we are going to touch on some spoilers. So if you want to listen to the other parts of the episode and then come back and listen to this part, that is perfectly fine. But with that, we're going to get into spoiler territory. In the movie, you have Kenai, who has two brothers. What happens is he's up for becoming a man. That's another similarity with this movie and Onward. It's almost like a birthday. He is becoming a man. It's his time to get his totem, which is a very memorable and emblematic thing in the Native American tribe that he is in. And he's really excited about getting that. And when he gets his totem, he is shocked and dismayed to see that it is a bear and not something as cool as his brother who got wisdom and his other brother who got leadership, which was, I believe it was an eagle and a wolf.
Yeah.
And so Sitka is his oldest brother. And then the middle child is
Dinahi,
I believe his name is. And then it's
Kenai.
These
are kind of hard names to say.
I do like the Native American aspects of the movie. You don't see a lot of that in Hollywood. They don't really make Native American animated films ever. This is the only one that I can really think of. So kudos to them for going all out. Disney's pretty well known for taking a culture and really sprucing it up. I mean, they did Pocahontas in the past, but this is more before. This takes place thousands of years before, in a Native American land where mammoths exist and other creatures. But it's mainly just Kenai's story to find, because he's really upset that he got this bear totem. He doesn't understand it. And then he sees a bear take his fish that he had hung earlier that morning. And then he goes on an adventure to take down this bear, and because he's really prejudiced against this bear for taking his stuff. So he goes on a journey of self-discovery when he goes up to the top of the mountain and ends up destroying and killing that bear that had taken his stuff. But in the process, the spirits from the mountain transform him into a bear, and he must now live as a bear and figure out what he has to do to turn back into a human, which they talk about him needing to go up to the mountain where the spirits touch the sky in order for him to turn back into a human. And that's the main plot of the movie.
Yeah.
So what did you think of that?
You know, I actually didn't mind the spiritual, I don't know if you call it, what do you call it, undertone or overtones? I'm not sure what the difference is, but I would say that there was stuff.
You could say overtones, I guess.
I would say there's some spiritual overtones in it. And I think that's a strong part of what the Native American culture believes in. And it's important parts of their adulthood. And especially when they earn those totems, like how it's bringing them one step closer to, you know, manhood. And they kind of, the brothers kind of give each other a hard time. And especially they give it to Kenai because he gets that love totem, which obviously he's disappointed by because, you know, it's always kind of like considered something sort of taboo to be like this lovey-dovey type of man. But, you know, when it's kind of given in the right areas, that it can actually make an effective and more grown up sort of man, I guess.
Well, the issues that I have with this movie, which there's a lot of things to like about it. It's a sweet tale with a brother who has gone through loss because his older brother had passed away. And that's why he was going over. That's why he was going after the bear in the first place, is that his brother had protected Kenai and Danahi from dying. And then the bear and him plummet to Sitka's death. And then he has to go search after the bear to get revenge. And so he's dealing with that. And he's also dealing with the fact that he's a bear and he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what he is supposed to eat. He doesn't know how he's supposed to act. And so that's a touching moment with Coda, who comes in and teaches him the ropes of how to become a bear. And in the process has to reveal to him that he actually killed Coda's mother. And that's why Coda is now an orphan. And that takes place later on towards the end of the film, where he has to talk to Coda about that whole event. And it was kind of played, like we said earlier, about with Phil Collins' score.
Yeah.
Kind of interplaying between the moment where he's telling him, and, you know, it's somewhat effective in conveying that message. I think the main issue that I have is it's such a short movie. You don't have a lot of character moments to really make me believe that Kenai is actually going to want to stay a bear. I mean, he's a bear for maybe a day and a half or two. And then all of a sudden he goes up to the top of the mountain and gets transformed back into a human. And then he says to his older brother, who's been searching for he's been searching for Kenai this whole time. He thinks Kenai has died.
And has also tried to kill him a few times because he doesn't realize that he is a bear.
And then he just tells his brother, Coda needs me. I gotta go.
Yeah. I guess it's not the most believable character arc in the story.
The music and everything, the emotional parts of the scene are all going towards that one main event, and it just doesn't connect. It did not seem believable. It was actually shocking to me watching it this time around, where I just like, what were they thinking? I mean, that was the plan from the very beginning when I was looking at when they were developing the story. They wanted to have him stay a bear. But it doesn't make any sense. He's lived with his brothers for how long? And then he's like, no, I don't want to live with you anymore. I want to live with this younger brother that I just met that annoys the heck out of me for the past 2 days.
Yeah, he's acting like doesn't even like him the whole time. And then, oh, wait, we finally formed a bond after one day. You know, and I think that's the one issue, is that this movie, he doesn't become a bear until almost 30 minutes. This movie's like an hour, 20, 25 minutes. Like, that's a quarter of the movie. and it, like, we're gonna get what, three quarters of the movie that's him being a bear, and it just feels like that it should have begun sooner, or we should have seen more of a journey or eventual, or just more, I don't know, as it's kind of going along. It should have been a course of several days, maybe. That would have made more sense to me. Or just, you know, like how the Lion King does it, where is it Timon? Yeah. No, not Timon and Pumbaa.
Pumbaa.
What is the Simba? Simba becomes a lion, and you see his gradual growing up as, you know, this lion that's brought up by Timon and Pumbaa, and he's kind of accepted into their ways. Well, you don't really get any gradual sort of growing up in this movie, so that doesn't work for it as well.
No, I would definitely agree with that. Because in that film, too, you had musical numbers that were connecting the narrative with their transition into adolescence. And in this one, you get music that kind of goes over just random events. Not really.
They don't feel significant.
They don't feel significant at all.
Yeah.
There's a song. They break out into song when they meet the other Big Bear group, which that's when Michael Clark Duncan makes an appearance, Tug. And they talk about fish. And then there's the Phil Collins On My Way song, which I actually liked the soundtrack with this movie. And that's another thing. This is a perfect example of a movie that's soundtrack is better than an actual movie. And so there's things about it that could have worked better, maybe if they had a longer runtime, or if they would have constructed the scenes better with the songs and had more of a narrative connection with the characters. But Zach, overall,
I was going to bring up, this is kind of a sidetracking point, but did you notice the font of the movie, like in the titles? Have you ever seen that SNL sketch of where Ryan Gosling's in it and he's like talking about the papyrus font that's used by Avatar, the movie Avatar? Well, this looks very similar to that type of font, and that's all I could think of when I was like watching some of this movie, was how they only used the papyrus font. All he did was like highlight it and put the papyrus font in it, and it just that just kind of makes it hilarious for me. Like, if you guys have not seen that skit on SNL, you need to go look it up. It's pretty hilarious. It's SNL with Ryan Gosling, papyrus font.
Oh man, we gotta find that and put it in the show notes.
We might have to. But yeah, that's all I could think of. It's like off-brand tees that use that same font, or Shakira merchandise. So yeah, that's just another sidetracking point.
Yeah, oh man, that is funny. And you know, in Avatar, there is a lot of Native American overtones in that as well. So that's an interesting connection there with the font between Brother Bear and Avatar, which Avatar's sequels will come out next year, starting with the first sequel in 2021. I think it's still due to arrive next year, most likely in December. But that was our overall take on this movie.
How many are you giving it?
I'm going to be giving this, because there's aspects of it I like, and obviously we talked about the dislikes. I'm going to have to go with a 5 out of 10. With this one.
Yeah, I think I'd give it it's about a 5 or 4.5. Like you said, it's just forgotten in the Disney canon. It's just forgettable. I feel like it borrows a little bit from other source material that is more effective. I just think it's too short. Like I feel like I couldn't even really get into it and it was already ending. So it's not bad. I thought the voice characterizations were good. I thought Joaquin Phoenix, who, by the way, I couldn't believe it was Joaquin Phoenix. I was like, I couldn't imagine the Joaquin Phoenix of today doing this, but, I thought he did all right. It just didn't do much more. It was kind of a lukewarm reception, I felt, to it.
Yeah, I mean, I like the message that it was trying to articulate. I like that it's this character who's kind of angry at the world, doesn't know his place in his culture, and then he's the youngest of his three brothers, and he ends up finding out how to love through this younger brother, in a sense, character in Coda. And they do form a bond. It just did not seem to connect.
It's a little disingenuous because of the length of time where they actually know each other. It's not right. necessarily believable.
Right.
So.
But that is our overall take. I would say if you are interested in watching this movie after listening to this podcast, you can check it out on Disney Plus if you have a subscription, which I believe it's still $5 a month, $5 or $6 yes. a month for a Disney Plus subscription, and you can watch it there. And as well as the Brother Bear 2, which is a
direct-to-DVD
sequel. Direct-to-video yes. sequel that came out in 2006.
I'm going to say skip it, but what do you say?
I mean, since it's readily available and you have access to it if you have a Disney Plus account, I would say if you already have a Disney Plus account, feel free to check it out. If you haven't seen it before, you can stream it if you're interested. If we've piqued your interest with the movie, go ahead and check it out on Disney Plus. There are a lot of other things to watch. I would say you're probably better off watching Onward if you haven't seen that. That is also on Disney Plus, and that is also included with the Disney Plus subscription. I liked that movie a lot more than this one.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more laughs, a lot more emotional component with that film. So,
yeah, I didn't feel as invested in this one with the characters.
There is the brother aspect of this movie that is similar in some ways to Onward, but I think they did the brother aspect a lot better in Onward, where you have this older brother who is almost like a father figure to his younger brother, and they go on that adventure to meet their father, but end up realizing that they've had each other all along, and ones that are going to get them through the tough times.
You know what else I thought was effective about Onward? That when they bring the father back, they only bring the pair of legs. So it's like they're kind of just babysitting him to like make sure he doesn't like wander off. So with the father coming back, I think as just half, it's not giving you the full person, and you're kind of able to look beyond that.
Right. Thank you guys for hanging out with us and listening to us talk about Brother Bear. Our next episode will be the Netflix original movie Extraction, with Chris Hemsworth as the lead and the Russo brothers producing. Thank you guys so much for joining us again this week on Classically Current.
If you like this, please be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast so that you will never miss a show.
And if you guys found value in our show, we'd love it if you guys gave us a review so that we can continue to grow and reach more enthusiastic movie fans in the future.
Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out a lot too.
Be sure to tune in next week.
Thanks again for joining us.
Stay classy.
And stay current.